Mrajuchtuden.
Mrajuchtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana, for joining me, I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On this episode, I have Andrew Carman. Andy is from Nome, Alaska. He is Inupiaq and Yupik. Andy is in long-term recovery. And on this episode, Andy courageously shares his story for those still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Andrew Carman. Hi, Andy. How are you?
Hey, Ralph. I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing good. Doing good. A little tired because I had a really busy weekend.
Good, good. I'm excited too. I'm feeling good. I got a good night's sleep. I had my coffee earlier, so I'm ready to get going.
Awesome. So Andy, can you go ahead and introduce yourself for our listeners?
Yes. So my name is Andrew Carman, but I go by Andy. I'm from Nome, Alaska. I've lived here in Anchorage since 2021. I'm a person in recovery. My story begins before I was born, obviously. It begins with my parents. My dad is an Inupiaq from the village of Deering, and my mom is a Yupik from the village of Imanuk. And they met at Mount Edgecombe High School when they were attending there. And they were high school sweethearts. They got married, and they had me in 96. And we lived in Nome. We lived in Deering, Imanuk, and then my dad got a job at a Red Dog Mine, and he was able to move our family to first Anchorage and then Eagle River before we finally settled in Wasilla in the year 2000. And I went, that's where I lived, Wasilla, from 2000 to 2008. I went to elementary school there, and I had a really, really good upbringing, really good childhood, thanks to my parents. My dad worked hard at Red Dog. He was gone a lot, and my mom took care of me and my little sister. And then we moved back to Nome in 2008 when I was hitting middle school. Then I went to high school at Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka. Graduated from there. I went to University of Alaska Anchorage for 1 year before dropping out and moving back to Nome. I did a couple odd jobs. I worked at a seafood plant. I worked at a gift shop. And then my main job up there was I was a videographer for the museum up there, the Cary M. McLean Memorial Museum. And I did that from summer of 2016 all the way up until the pandemic hit. Then that job got lost. And then after that, I went to the Ernie Turner Center.
So when you, before you went to the Ernie Turner Center, you know, what was your relationship to alcohol like?
So my earliest memories all involved family members with alcohol, namely my dad. My dad is an alcoholic. And I remember when I was really little going around our apartment and then later on in our house and seeing him kind of passed out on the floor, different parts of the house. And I knew it was because he was drinking. And when that would happen, my mom would take me and my little sister, and she'd load us up in the car and she'd drive us so that we would go stay in a cousin or aunt or uncle's place. So from the earliest age I could remember, I always knew that alcohol was bad. And then, you know, my dad continued drinking until he got into a horrible DUI crash, crashed his car, wrecked someone's travel trailer, and he spent time in prison. And then he got sober. He was sober for about 7-8 years, and then alcohol was just out of the picture for that almost that entire time. Now, my own personal experience with alcohol began when I was in Nome, Alaska. So I went to Nome for middle school, and then I went to Sitka for high school. Now, in between the summers, I would spend my summers in Nome, and my friends, we like to drive around. There was always one friend who had a car or a truck, and we would drive around. And starting when we were like 15, 16, they started bringing beers with us in the car. And I watched them start drinking beers, and I watched them like start getting really buzzed off just a couple beers. And again, I always knew that alcohol was bad. So I would have like 2 or 3 sips of a beer. Maybe I would have one full beer, but often I would let them finish it because I was not interested. I was not interested in making myself dumber. I was not interested in knowing what that side of the world looked like. And that, you know, I never drank in high school. I smoked cigarettes though, but I watched them smoke weed, but I never had any interest. Like I would take like half a puff or a full puff and like, but not really breathe it in, pretend to breathe it in, breathe it out just to try to look cool to them. So, and when I was in high school, I saw some drug use when I was living in the dorms in Mount Edgecombe High School. It's sad to say, but I did see some drug use. I saw people taking like cough syrup. I saw people taking pills, and I watched them become like high and drunk off of those things. And I never had any interest. It always just seemed scary to me. And I kept away from that up until I was about, I would say 18 is when I actually started really experimenting with alcohol. And then, you know, around that time, marijuana too. I had just dropped out of University of Alaska Anchorage, and I was living at a girlfriend's place at the time. We were living in her dad's house, and I started drinking and smoking marijuana with her. And when it hit me, it was like, oh, this is what the big deal is about. This is why people do this. And I liked it. So 18, 19, I was drinking and smoking weed with this girlfriend. And it hit me like a brick to the face. I enjoyed it right off the bat. And I almost immediately started abusing it. I immediately started drinking too much, getting too high off marijuana. I would mix them often. So that kind of kicked off my slow but sure problem with alcohol. And then that girlfriend and I broke up. I moved back with into my parents' house. And by that time, my dad had begun drinking again heavily. And he could be really emotionally abusive sometimes. And alcohol became kind of like my coping mechanism to try to deal with that, deal with him, and deal with this inner loser that I felt for dropping out of college. Now, I had dropped out of college to try to become a filmmaker because I had this obsession with cameras and editing and filming equipment. I actually did get a job in Nome at the museum doing videos for the museum. I would videotape a lot of Inupiaq Eskimo dances. I had the opportunity to travel to the villages of Teller and Elam. I got hired by Kowarik, a native corporation, to go with them to film in Elam. And I never let the alcohol or the marijuana get in the way of the work until about 2019. 2019 is when I started having problems at work because of my drinking, especially. Boss started to notice. I did get in trouble at work. I got a written reprimand from my employer saying that, you know, obviously I'd come to work under the influence of something. So I had to enroll in outpatient treatment. And so I joined Norton Sound Health Corporation has a program, Norton Sound Behavioral Health. They have a outpatient program in Nome called Matrix, the Matrix meetings. And I did those. I would take PTO from work and go to these Matrix outpatient meetings 4 times a week. And that was where I first kind of found a recovery community. I was there with a bunch of other people from Nome, and they had They were also there because of alcohol or drug related problems. Some of them had to be there legally. Some people like me were there because they had to keep their job. And you know, I got regular urine tests. I was seeing a counselor, two different counselors actually, many times a week. Still drinking though. They knew I was still drinking. The reason why I kept drinking was because the withdrawals I would have from not drinking were too uncomfortable for me to handle. Before that, I had to go to the hospital for alcohol withdrawal once in Nome and another time in Anchorage. And that was the worst consequences that I received from alcohol health-wise was the withdrawals. I had to go to the hospital in Nome because I started throwing up the last bit of alcohol I had in my stomach. And you know, by that point I had been drinking. In order to function, I needed to drink all day. Like I could barely go 2 or 3 hours without drinking. But when I threw up all the alcohol that was in my stomach, this was in October of 2019. My mom had to take me to the hospital, and I got the IV, all the Ativan and all of it. I spent 3 days in the hospital medically detoxing. After that, on willpower alone, I was able to not drink for about a week, just a fear of going back to where I was. And sure enough, after a week, I started drinking again, 2 or 3 a night, 3 or 4 a night. And then within 3 weeks, I was probably close to where I was again. And then had to go to the hospital again, Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage, when I was on a little vacation here in Anchorage. Same deal, drinking all day till my body couldn't take it anymore. Had to have my uncle drive me to the hospital. I detoxed at the hospital there and then was able to not drink for a couple days, but then went back to Nome and just kept drinking again.
Man, your story I could relate to a lot. Oh, man, when I first drank, I just loved that feeling, you know, that feeling that it felt so fuzzy and warm. And, you know, you just didn't think of the things that were bothering you at the time, you know, or even before the things that you went through. So it took all of those emotions away that you've stuffed, you know, stuffed and were either ashamed or too, you know, proud to say anything to other people because, you know, I was taught not to say anything, you know, not to bring up uncomfortable things that people might be ashamed of, you know?
Yes. I understand that, Ralph. When I was drinking and using marijuana, I didn't have to deal with any emotional problems that I might've had. I didn't have to feel like a loser. I didn't have to deal with being bored or feeling like I wasn't having a purpose because my purpose became chasing that high that I got from alcohol and from marijuana. And it's crazy the stuff that we'll do in order to obtain that high.
And you know how people like talk down, even people who have been through the struggles and stuff, you know, there's people that drink like mouthwash and stuff like that. And you always say, oh man, I've never do that, you know, or even cough syrup, like you were talking about, you know, that had the alcohol content or something like that. They even put it behind like lock and key at stores in Bethel, where I'm from, you know, like the Listerine or the even Lysol, you know. And me, I would always say, man, I would never do that, whatever, you know. But in the throes of it, I would try to drink like cough syrup that had a little bit of alcohol in it just so I could, you know, feel something again. That was like the later stages. If I couldn't afford alcohol, or if, you know, if I was, you know, stuck at home or something like that, you know. And that sickness that you talk about, the hangover afterwards, after I've been drinking for like days and days, you know, I would be, it wouldn't be a hangover anymore. It would be like a total illness. It would be just illness, you know, where that could get really dangerous for people with alcohol, because alcohol withdrawals are scary and they're dangerous. And I've known people who have passed because of that, you know. So
if you are going through that, please go to the ER or, you know, to your medical provider, because it is dangerous. I've been to the ER as well and been through that same thing where they give you the fluids and the medicine. I forget what it was called, what you said.
Ativan, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, you know, and every time I went there, it was more than once, you know. Thankfully, there was kind people, you know, the kind nurses that were there that, you know, didn't have any judgments, and they were really helpful. But, you know, of course, I was ashamed. I was so ashamed to have to be able to or have to go to the ER, you know. That shame is pretty crippling, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember I couldn't believe it as it was happening. You know, the first time it happened, which was October of 2019, and I started seizuring uncontrollably, and I had never had a seizure before where I just could not stop convulsing and shaking. And I remember my mom bringing me up to Norton Sound Hospital in Nome and having to wait in the waiting room until they brought me into the ER. And then my mom explaining to them what was happening, which from what she knew, I mean, she knew that I was drinking heavily, but I don't think she knew how much I was drinking. First they tried to get the IV in my right arm, but I was convulsing and shaking too hard, and they were trying to hold it down to get the IV in, and they couldn't do it in my right arm. So they gave up and then put the IV in my left arm, and they were able to get it. And then I stopped convulsing. Stopped shaking so uncontrollably. Then they, you know, started asking me the questions. I had to urinate for them so they can get a sample of, you know, what was all inside of me, because, you know, you go into the hospital like this, they don't know if you have other drugs in your system.
Yeah, that's scary. That is scary. You know, even asking for help, going to the ER is a scary thing, and that's what deters a lot of people. But man, it could save your life, you know. Don't, you know, put that shame away. If you're sick, listen to your body, you know what I mean? I mean, your body will tell you what's going on, and don't ignore it. Even though you feel shame, it can save your life.
Yes, and from what I understand about alcohol and drug withdrawal, alcohol and I think benzos are the only withdrawals that will absolutely kill you. If your body is that addicted to it and you withdraw, those two will kill you.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, medical attention is needed, you know, because I hear some people, and I've done this too myself, where I go, okay, I'm going to wean myself off, right? I'm going to wean myself off, and that doesn't work, because you start to feel the effects again, and then it's taking the sickness away a little bit. And then with me, I can't stop, you know, I just have to have more, and I end up going buy more until I'm just out of it again, you know, blacked out and not knowing what to do, and then I'm even sicker the next day or the next how many days later, you know?
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about it is, obviously, for people who have problems with alcohol like we do, try to only have one or two. It doesn't work for us, because we want that. It's like getting the ball rolling down a hill. Once you give that ball a little tap, it's going to keep rolling down the hill. You can't stop it. That's why it's important not to have one of whatever it is, whatever kind of drug, because we just we go ham, as they say.
That's the truth. You said something earlier where you said you drank because you felt like a failure from dropping out of school.
Yes. So I got into the University of Alaska Anchorage because I was in the program ANSEP. That's Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. And I did the Acceleration Academy and the Summer Bridge. And then I got a full scholarship to attend any University of Alaska campus, so long as I was studying engineering or STEM related field. But I completely lost interest, because when I was in high school, I discovered filmmaking and cameras. And I had gotten a small part-time job filming for this local TV station in Sitka. And so by the time I got to college, I was not going to classes. I was not doing homework. I was not turning in assignments. I was literally spending all my time on my computer studying filmmaking and going to Best Buy and getting cameras and stuff. And so I failed all my classes first semester, failed all my classes second semester. I lost that scholarship. And I came home with a plan to, you know, pursue this filmmaking thing. But as you can imagine, my parents were not into it. Neither was any of my family. They were very disappointed in me. They thought I was just slacking. And I, in a way, I kind of was. But I was so determined to try to be a filmmaker and a videographer. And I did get the job. I did get a filmmaking job in Nome, and it helped. It helped me reassure myself that I wasn't some kind of just loser college dropout. But the alcohol, in a lot of ways, was to dampen the feeling of being a failure.
Yeah, and I went through that too, because I went to UAAF for 1 year. I got a scholarship through the school district. In Bethel, LKSD. And after that year, I should have went on campus and stayed on campus. But, you know, a bunch of Bethel people rented out the bottom of this house, you know, and so it was like, we called it the Bethel house. And, you know, there was a lot of partying, but, you know, not all the time, but there was enough to where I wasn't doing the homework and going to classes like I should. And I ended up, you know, leaving after that year. And I, you know, I tried to go back to the university, but I just wasn't in it. And I felt so much like a failure. Like, my friends were still going to UAF and wherever they were going, trying to, you know, they were finishing school and stuff like that. And myself, I was like in Bethel trying to work and going through these revolving doors of, you know, getting a paycheck and ordering booze and drinking. And, it, you know, it was just like a revolving door. And that failure, man, that's like a, it's like a gut, so like something is pulling your gut and like making you feel this way. Like, you know, you're not nothing. You're nothing, you know, look at all your friends and you find yourself comparing yourself to all these other people that society is saying, okay, people that are going through school and everything, they're doing the right thing and whatnot. And when I heard you say you wanted to pursue film, and like your parents weren't up for that, and, you know, I don't know, other people are not up for it. There's people that do like art and people do like music and things that are not considered like the right path to do, like going through college or whatnot, you know. But there's people that are successful in that, you know?
Like, I knew yourself, Ralph. I know that you're an artist and that you get grants and you get recognition for that. Going back to the failure thing, some people feel like a failure and they use that as ammunition to work harder and be more determined. And I was able to do that for for a while, but then I sank to, you know, other people feel like a failure and then it just makes them feel more and more like a failure. And I went down that route as well.
Yes. And then you feel like you start to get depressed, you know, and that depression starts to build and it starts to eat away at you. And you figure, oh no, what am I going to do? I'm just going to drink myself to death, I guess, and not feel those feelings again. That's what I was thinking, you know, just to get away from those, that shame and that failure and, you know, just feeling like a nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Well, hey, what would you say to someone who's either thinking about getting sober or, you know, are in the midst of their struggles?
To new people, a message I want to give them is, you know, if you're an alcoholic or not, the writing is on the wall, and, you know, if you need help too. You can put it off for a long time. Lots of us have put it off for years and years, but there's going to be a time and a place where you just need to admit that it's not gonna, it can't keep going the way it is, because it's, it can lead to jail or the hospital or death. So you got to just make that leap. You got to make that leap into the next stage of your life, which is recovery. And if you don't make that leap, then it can, you can be in the same place or a worse place.
The alcohol question. Does alcohol bring out the real you, or does alcohol turn you into somebody else?
You know, for a long time, Ralph, I thought that alcohol brought out the real me. And I think it made me feel that way because I've had anxiety for most of my life. When I was a kid, it was a real problem. And when I discovered alcohol, I realized I could use alcohol to dampen down the feeling of anxiety. But what I realized later on was that the alcohol was just covering it. And when the alcohol wore off, the anxiety would come back like 10,000 times worse. And you can cover a problem up and pretend that it's not there for a long time, but it just doesn't work in the end. You got to confront the problem right away. And to answer your question, no, alcohol never made me more of the person that I am. Being sober makes me the person that I am, because I'm living life on life's terms, and I'm not, nothing is being covered. There's no boost. There's no help. I'm not getting any help from anything. All of my interactions with people, all of my communications with people, all my performance at work, at the meetings, that's all coming from who I am right now, which is a sober person. Always enjoyed talking about things that I'm passionate about. And, you know, I'm passionate about filmmaking, photography, movies, books, and obviously recovery. So newcomers are. And I've been asked to speak at the Denali conference that we had, other conferences that we've had, introduce people, which I'm really grateful for. I'm really glad I can use this communication skill that I've learned and developed in the and use it to help promote recovery.
Well, Andy, and man, I am so, so grateful that you are able to come on this Sunday and share your story and share to the world, man. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart, man.
Thank you for having me on, Ralph. I was really excited to do this. I've been looking forward to this for a while, and I can't wait to hear it when it comes out.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Mondays at 9:30 a.m. and again repeating at 5:30 p.m. on 91.3 KIDE, Hoopa Tribal Radio, serving Hoopa, California. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.